okay, I have $200,000 that I need to make in the next week, and payroll is late and the company's about to unfold. What do? Get out, hustle, start making phone calls. Somehow you get the money in and the business continues to go. You hear stories like that. Like, it's the constant close calls. Like, the earth is cracking and you just barely jump at the last minute and survive.
Welcome to Small Business Stories presented by Vistaprint. My name is Jeff Israel. This episode, we're going to change things up a little bit. Normally, we talk to small business owners, but this time, we're going to talk to someone who also talks to a lot of small business owners. He's a bit of a small business expert. Joining me today is the host and creator of the television show Startup, Gary Bredo. Gary, thanks for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Gary, tell us a little bit about the TV show Startup, what it's all about, and how it began.
Yeah, sure. So Startup is a national television show. It airs on three different networks, PBS, Create TV Network, World Channel, and then it airs on Amazon Prime as well. The show is broadcast in about 96% of the U.S. and then several foreign countries and in-flight video. And then it's available, of course, on PBS.org and through the PBS app for Apple TV and Roku. Essentially, what the show is, we travel coast to coast and we feature fascinating business owners and talk about their life. The show kind of started from season one as a kind of a broad scope look at their business. And over the years, it's really evolved into being a very personal program that really, you know, shows you who these entrepreneurs are as people. And it allows the viewers to relate. I think it gives people confidence if they say, oh, well, you know, here's a person I'm watching on television that started a business. You know, they had a 450 credit score and $0 in the bank. Mm-hmm. That sounds like me. Maybe I can do this too. So that's really what the show is showing people that just normal, everyday folks just like them are going out and chasing their dream. And a lot of them are able to succeed. And we just present the stories kind of as they are.
That's great. And did you have a connection with small businesses before, or how did that come about?
I did, ever since I was a young kid. So my mom was an entrepreneur. She owned a hair salon that was attached to my house. So wow. I grew up literally, you know, going in there and listening to all the town's women gossiping, you know, about everything that was happening in town. But I saw my mom taking money for her services and conducting transactions with these folks. She provided a valuable service that people in the community wanted from her. Also, my grandfather ran a lumber yard, and then my uncle was a farmer. I grew up with a lot of farmers in the family. So we would go on the weekends and sell produce at Detroit's Eastern Market. And, you know, as young as 10, 11 years old, I remember going there and selling zucchini and squash and tomatoes and cash transactions. Again, it showed me as a young kid that, you know, if you could provide a valuable service, you could earn money. Around that time, too, I grew up across the street from a golf course. And I used to go out and collect golf balls and sell them out in the front yard instead of a lemonade stand. I had nice. A golf ball stand, and I sold a lot of golf balls. And that's how I was able to afford my Air Jordans, because my parents didn't have money. So they were like, you want the expensive tennis shoes, you better figure out a way to get them. And I did. I always did. You know, I always figured out a way of selling golf balls or, you know, anything else I got into as a kid.
So small business has literally been a part of your life, your entire life.
Yeah, from as long as I can remember. And then I went to college. I got a marketing degree, minor in psychology. I graduated. Everybody wanted to be a pharmaceutical rep at that time. That was the pinnacle of employment. So I landed the job as a pharma rep, and it just further proved my unemployability, we'll say.
Traveling around with the little suitcase full of samples and all that?
It was more or less overrated bagel delivery.
Ah, I see.
Sitting in the office with several other pharma reps, you know, hoping to get a minute with the doctor. And then it didn't last very long. And then I started a production company.
Have you seen anything in the way that your mother or grandfather, the way, you know, fundamentals of being a business owner from back then that you see in the business owners you talk to today?
Yeah, I really think it comes down to doing something that you love. It sounds kind of cliche, but I think that in the case of my mother, she really enjoyed that sort of personal connection with the community. Yes, she was doing hair, she was providing a service, but it never seemed like she was working, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah.
The most successful business owners that I meet today with the show, it just feels that same way. They're not really working. They're just doing what they love, and they found a way to get paid for it.
Sure. So it really is that, as we like to say here, like, no one starts a business because it's easy, but that passion driving them is sort of a common denominator across some of the more successful businesses you speak to.
Yeah, and it really cuts through. It's extremely obvious, the folks that love what they do versus the ones that are struggling, you know, and trying to make something work, trying to put a square peg into a round hole.
Has talking to small businesses and living and breathing it sort of helped you run your business? How does that all work out?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, my production company essentially started with just me right after I graduated college, you know, did the pharma thing for a while. I ended up borrowing a couple cameras from University of Michigan, went out and ended up shooting a documentary film with a couple of friends. And that kind of launched the whole thing. From there, I got the bug and realized that it was possible to do this and potentially make a living. The film was distributed globally. I came back, ended up getting funded for another film. And then the production company grew, took on a partner and some contractors. And we ended up, you know, doing hundreds of television commercials, becoming one of the largest providers locally for Comcast. Wow. So my production, you know, company sort of continued to grow and grow and grow until the idea for startup came along. And then it sort of switched from the commercial and agency end into a television studio. So I've definitely learned a lot about scaling and the right time to grow, the right time to bring on more people or let go of people. It's, yeah, I mean, you always got to pay attention to what's happening around you. But right now, I think we're a good, comfortable size.
Awesome. Yeah, it's pretty cool that your production company has grown from, you know, just you with some borrowed cameras, and now you're on a national and international level telling the stories of small business owners who started with a dream.
Yeah, and really, everything's changed so much. So even when the show first started, we had in our downtown Detroit production studio, I don't know, at one point, 10 people sitting, you know, on computers, editing, doing this and that. And then we realized over time, as internet speeds continued to increase, well, you know, our audio post guy is out in LA now. We have our finish editor is in New York. We have a color guy that's out in LA. So now it's down to kind of the core people, and we sub out a lot of the stuff out of state. Wow. So it's really changed even in this 7-year period.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. And I wanted to ask you, it might be a little bit more off topic, but I've heard a little bit about the business community in Detroit and how especially the small business community is part of sort of the revitalization of Detroit. Have you noticed that, or what's the business community in Detroit like to you, and how have you been a part of it?
Yeah, the business community in Detroit it's fascinating. I mean, when we set up shop in Corktown, I always like to tell people we were there before the streetlights, and wow, it's true. The biggest thing when I was sitting on the association, the Corktown Association board, was literally trying to figure out a way to get streetlights because cars were getting broken into. Since then, you know, billionaire Dan Gilbert came in from Quicken Loans and kind of set up shop. He brought in, you know, thousands of employees, bought up thousands of square feet. A lot of those employees need places to go eat. And he really kickstarted sort of the progression and growth in downtown Detroit. And everything is sort of filled in the blanks. There's folks in Detroit that see that as a positive. And of course, there's folks that have sort of been priced out and pushed out that see it as a negative. Mm-hmm. But regardless of what side of the fence you're standing on, the city of Detroit is an extremely different place than it was 10 years ago. There's people walking around, there's people going out, you know, to lunch and everything. It's just things that you never would have expected to see even 10 years ago. And the small business community, it's hard to say. A lot of the businesses that made up the heart and the soul of Detroit, frankly, have been, you know, priced out of the city. They've had to go to other places, more affordable places in the city. An example is, you know, like Henry the Hatter. He was a guy who was in a spot on Broadway for 50 plus years, and he got priced out. He ended up, you know, getting a small spot in the market, thankfully. But there's a lot of stories that didn't have that sort of happy ending, that, you know, businesses that weathered the storm of the 80s and the 90s and then the Great Recession, and at the end got priced out and had to leave anyway. So it's a city that's changed more quickly, I think, than any other city in sort of U.S. history. It's such a dramatic, profound change. It literally, Jeffrey, but like, but if I go down there today, and I go down in 2 weeks, there will be, you know, five new restaurants and, wow. and a new building either being torn down or renovated. The change is almost happening in, you know, sort of in real time right in front of your face. So it's kind of weird, honestly. And we left downtown Detroit. Now we're up in Ferndale.
That's pretty incredible. I wanted to switch topics a little bit and talk about some of the business owners you talk to. You mentioned passion being a through line between all of them. Are there any other things that you can remember that sort of every business owner you talk to either has this quality about them or part of their story? Are there any things that stand out to you?
Yeah, I think there's this level of sort of fearlessness that almost borders being a little bit crazy, a little bit insane. It's the eternal optimist sort of theory. And it's the ability to weather those storms, again, just to see through the rough times and continue to keep going forward. Again, the really successful business owners that we see see these massive challenges that come through, like, okay, I have $200,000 that I need to make in the next week and payroll is late and the company's about to unfold. What do? Get out, hustle, start making phone calls. Somehow you get the money in and the business continues to go. You hear stories like that. Like it's the constant close calls, like the earth is cracking and you just barely jump at the last minute and survive. You kind of hear that all the time. And it's like people that have 9-to-5 jobs and there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that, but would probably look at a lot of the stories of these entrepreneurs and say, I could never handle that level of stress or anxiety in my life. And sometimes even as an entrepreneur, I question the sanity as well.
For sure.
So yeah, fearlessness definitely is a common theme amongst the folks that we talk to.
For sure. Are there any over the past few seasons and maybe even this current season, favorite business owners that you've talked to? I don't know if they're like children. Yeah. Where you can pick a favorite, but any ones that you just love?
There's a couple that stand out. There's a woman in Denver, Colorado named Lorena Cantoravici, and she owns a company called Maria Empanada. And it's named after her mother, Maria. She's from Argentina. And as a child, they went through a lot of financial hardships. She recounts a time when her and her mother, it was just them two, were evicted and homeless for a considerable amount of time, sleeping on, you know, couch hopping from friend's house to this apartment to that apartment. She remembers sleeping under a table for a while.
Wow.
And she saved up just enough money to be able to come to America. And when she got here, she spoke not a lick of English. And the one thing that she really knew how to do was make her mother's beloved empanadas. Mm. So with her small sort of connection in her community with Argentinian folks, and she started making empanadas. People started ordering from her. You know, she got a location, and that location sort of bombed. Instead of giving up, she just kept going forward. Now, I mean, she runs a multi-million dollar business. She has five locations in Denver. She tried to get a bank loan 15 different times from 15 banks. They all said no. And it's like, who doesn't quit after 13?
Yeah, right.
Who doesn't quit after 8? But this woman, I mean, you talk about that crazy fearlessness and empanadas, you know, one food item. And now it's changed the entire course of her life. And her husband and her children and for a long lineage of people, you know, that will go long beyond Lorena because of her perseverance and refusal to give up and accept anything but success. And it took a long time. But not, I mean, stories like that. And it really touches a lot on immigrant business owners and folks that come to this country and work really hard and follow the proper necessary steps, you know, to work here and contribute a lot to society. So this episode really touches a lot on that as well.
That's a fantastic story, one that I think people would love to see, and then also one that makes me kind of hungry. But
they're so good, man. Man.
Road trip to Denver in the foreseeable future, I think, for sure. I was curious, too, just as a viewer, and I'm always curious about this in terms of shows in general, but because the stories you're telling are so personal and do get so deep, like, are you really developing almost like relationships with these business owners? And what's it like after the show? This seems, you know, on occasionally on a TV show, it seems really like here's a surface level highlight of someone. But you guys are really going pretty deep and telling some emotional stories. So I was wondering about that.
No, we spend a day in the life with these folks. Like when we you know, you go out and we set up camp, let's say in Denver or Idaho this year, and you spend a full day with these folks and travel around and go to different locations. And of course it gets personal, and we definitely develop relationships. I mean, I'm still in contact with folks from, you know, from season one, season two, that will reach out on Facebook or we'll have a phone conversation. So it definitely doesn't end when the cameras stop rolling. Of course, there's folks that are sort of private that you don't maintain that long-term relationship with, but there's a lot that we definitely do. One of the companies this year, Davinia Water, a fantastic company in Idaho Falls with a great, great backstory. And this family is just so incredibly welcoming. Mm-hmm. Crosby, the son, he had this bottle of, God, what was it, like Papio Jack or something, whiskey. It's like this $300 or $400 bottle, yeah, of whiskey. He's like, this is a great day. And he cracked it open at the end of the shoot and poured us all a little drink. Yeah, I mean, it definitely gets personal. A lot of times we'll go out to dinner with the folks afterward or meet up with them later in the week if we're in town for a week. But yeah, definitely personal relationships form.
That's fantastic. And I'm assuming for a lot of these people, just with your background and expertise, you can become a resource for help, for questions. I was curious if there's something that maybe you don't know that might fall out of your skill set or you haven't learned about fully and you do want to give advice, where do you turn to for advice? Is there any specific place that you turn to?
I mean, I definitely, you know, follow a few folks on Facebook. I'm sure that, you know, millions other Gary B and, you know, all these sure, other yeah. folks that, you know, listening. And I love the message that he puts across, this sort of level of fearlessness and take no crap from people, sort of, you know, keep your head down and work 24/7. Although my level of intensity isn't anywhere near that. I don't know how that guy functions or when he sleeps or how he sleeps. I think there's a camera crew that sleeps in bed with him and like, you know, does up a minute by minute, you know, updates on whether he's snoring or not. But yeah, I mean that, and then just, you know, different books or whatever, but it's throughout the season, I get to learn so much from the actual business owners. Sometimes I just kind of take a step back from it, you know,
sure,
and take a deep breath, but it's a lot throughout the season, just talking to these folks. And there isn't really a lot that I'm seeking when I come off of a season, because it's been like this information dump that really lasts, you know, for a good 6 months, especially revisiting and doing voiceovers and doing research. There's just so much information and knowledge that comes from the business owners that we feature.
Sure, that makes total sense. And you mentioned books. I feel like this is a perfect segue to give another cool title beyond just host and creator, author. You have a book coming out.
Yeah, we do. And really, it's, you know, we get about 20 minutes to tell the story. And as you just talked about, you know, we're spending this full day and it's really personal with these folks. And out of that 20 minutes, there's a lot that falls on the cutting room floor.
Right.
So really the startup story is basically, it's a much deeper dive into the life of the small business owner and really breaks down how they were able to start their business. So there's a lot of really great lessons and heartfelt moments that we can't necessarily always share, you know, fully on the show. So the book also acts as not necessarily a how-to, but how they did it. So right. it's up to the reader to be able to interpret, is this information useful to me? If not, turn to the next story, and that one probably will have something in it.
Really cool. And when is it coming out, or do you know yet, and where can people find it?
We met with a publisher yesterday, so we're exploring some different routes, and we hope to have it out before the holiday.
Very cool. One of the things I think we've found, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, anyone can read a great article or go to Vistaprint's Resource Center and get some good education on how to do stuff. But one of the main ways that people learn, at least we've seen, is just seeing how another business does it and going from there. And I think that's an incredible resource.
Yeah, it's kind of piggybacks off of like the referral thing. You know, if somebody refers something to you, it tends to carry a little bit more weight. When you hear a small business story telling their exact story and how they do it, it tends to carry a little bit more weight than just maybe reading something, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So you've talked to tons of businesses. This might be an unanswerable question, but we'll go for it. Is there any like industry you haven't even explored yet that you are curious to find a business owner in? Like, it seems like you've got culinary and, you know, talked to tons of other business owners. Any sort of businesses that you're like, I'd love to talk to a business owner that does X?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is, but those are industries that we would say on a federal level still probably wouldn't make
sure.
The cut in terms of you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're in Massachusetts.
On a state-to-state level, we have been approached by several interesting businesses that have been approved by the state,
right,
but not necessarily by federal. At some point, maybe that will come, but I think that's a whole different sort of dynamic and interesting business model that will have a place in the future. And outside of that sort of arena, gosh, we have really touched a lot of different categories, from tech to food to service to, I mean, a guy who gave camel tours out in the middle of the desert in Nevada. Wow. I mean, goat yoga, like, I mean, just interesting, different sort of thing. So there isn't anything outside of, you know, what I mentioned that's extremely on our radar. It really comes down to casting. I mean, you can have 5 different restaurateurs and each one of their stories are going to be completely different and fascinating in their own unique individual way, just because everyone's story is so different. So I think that the category almost is secondary to the actual business owner and their personal story.
So this is sort of the $1 million question, but what's one piece of advice you would give to any small business owner that approached you?
You know, entrepreneurs tend to think of themselves last. So I would say when you're putting your business plan together, don't forget operating capital, because that's the number one thing we sort of see across the board with businesses that start to fail, is when they're putting their initial plan together, they don't think about actual survival during the time that it's going to take to launch the business. So don't forget about your operating capital.
Awesome. Fantastic advice. And tell me a little bit about the upcoming season. When does it come out? Any previews of some episodes that you're looking forward to? Just curious to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, the new season starts airing in mid to late September, early October is when, you know, about over 90% of the country will be airing it. This season touches on some really interesting issues. Like I said, you know, in the first episode with Maria Empanada, talking about immigrant business owners, to Davinia Water, which really explores the challenges that exist in the water system right now, local municipalities and the challenges in finding clean water, down to, you know, Woodward Throwbacks is a company in Detroit here, this couple that goes out and salvages pieces of wood and lumber from garbage dumps, essentially.
Wow.
People that dump garbage on the side of the road illegally, they're finding it and then sort of reclaiming this lumber and selling it on a mass scale. It's a really big, successful company. To a guy like in Ogden, Utah, that started a sort of a co-working space with, you know, they're running a podcast out of there and they have food trucks, everything else. So, I mean, it really, this year really runs the gamut too. There's one company that really stands out that's in Denver called Food Maven.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy takes food surplus, essentially, that's imperfect food, you know,
sure,
an apple that has a whatever, you know, a little blemish on it or something. And he's selling it to institutional kitchens and restaurants and donating a ton of food to people in need. So from massive sort of global social impact, you know, down to a company that does cross stitching.
Yeah,
that's everything in between.
Very cool. I know you told us at the top of the show, but just once again, where can people find Startup once the new season comes out?
Sure. It's available on your local PBS station. Just check your local listings for the day and time. And then it's on Create TV Network, World Channel. And then I believe in around February, it'll be available on Amazon Prime. And it's also available on PBS.org and through your PBS app on Apple TV and Roku.
Very cool. And any social networks that you want to send the people to follow for updates?
Yeah, you can follow Startup TV Show, you know, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Gary, thanks so much for joining us. This was a fantastic episode and this has been awesome.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Small Business Stories is presented by Vistaprint. For more advice on running your business, visit the ideas and advice section on Vistaprint.com or follow Vistaprint on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you know a business we should feature on Small Business Stories, email us at podcast@vistaprint.com.